Hey folks, greetings from the Offensive Security Group here at Secure IT 360, coming at you with another episode of the Cyber Threat Perspective. Today we have Tyler Roberts on the show. Tyler, how's it going, man?
It's going great, Happy to be here.
Yeah, awesome. So last couple episodes has been Darius and I, so we're changing things up a little bit, getting Tyler in on the podcast, so that's nice. In this episode, we're going to be talking about pen testing challenges. So challenges in pen testing, in all those kinds of things, the hurdles that pen testers have to overcome or may have to overcome in their job duties, in their career, kind of how to handle them, how we've handled them, our advice and recommendations, and in all sorts of things in between. So, Tyler, why don't you intro the topic and jump right into it?
Yeah, so I guess the point was for this podcast was really just some self-thought. I was like, what is something useful that I've had to learn in the industry that I want others to know? And so I thought that shedding some light on some of the challenges that I faced in my job, both personally and professionally, would help some people out there that maybe they're, you know, facing similar issues, or maybe could resonate with some of the things that I'm saying, just have some discourse about that. And to jump right into it, I think one of the biggest things that I struggled with coming into the industry was the big learning curve that you get hit with when you come in the industry, especially how I did. For those of you who don't know, differing from Spencer and Darius, I don't really come from an IT background. So I didn't have a lot of the sysadmin experience or the help desk experience. So a lot of that I skipped when I got into pen testing. And so that faced me with a lot of challenges. And the continuous learning and development aspect of pen testing was really hard to get into the swing of things, because when you come in, there is so much information that you need to know. And since the information is always changing and new, you know, that kind of made the swing of things even more difficult. And I guess one of the things that helped me solve that was really learning. Brad was great at mentoring me in how to learn independently. When I first got into the industry, a big thing for me was anytime I faced a problem, I brought it straight to management. Hey, here's what I'm seeing. Here's my issue. What do you think? And that kind of bit me in the butt a few times, because instead of trying to learn independently and get answers on my own, I was relying on other people. Not to say don't ask your peers or managers, because they will have answers for you. But a big thing in this industry is going to be being self-taught and being independent. And so one of the biggest things that I learned that helped me overcome that challenge was just learning how to Google and learning how to find information quickly, which has really propelled me in my job. Because now when I face issues, I don't really have to go to anybody, and it kind of streamlines the process of getting that information since I can do it independently. And it may sound silly to some people that learn how to Google, because everybody knows how to type something in a Google search bar, but not everybody knows how to type the correct words in that are going to get the right articles and the right information you need quickly. So that's been huge.
Learning how to learn is a skill in of itself, right? I think that's one of the benefits of college and going to university and things like that, is you develop the muscles and the skill to learn how to research, to troubleshoot and things like that. So I think that's definitely a big component of it, of continuous learning, is learning how to learn, learning how to research, learning how to troubleshoot. And that's one of the reasons why, for people who want to get into a technical role in cybersecurity, I really, really, really like the help desk route, because you learn how to troubleshoot, how to ask questions about the issues that you're experiencing, and how to think through problems, and how to develop solutions for those problems. You know, so that's a very big component of it. And I think something that you touched on as well was that, you know, it's okay to ask questions, right? It's okay to ask people for help, to seek advice and stuff like that. But I think there is a certain amount of struggle you should go through to try and figure things out, right? If you if you are working on a problem, right, and you're just kind of going through and you're like, I can't really figure it out. I've tried a couple things. And then you go ask for help. The person is probably going to give you the answer. And that means that you're not going to experience what it feels like to figure that out.
Right.
And that feeling of figuring it out is like, is the thing. Like, that's why we love pen testing so much, is like that moment when you figure out the problem, or you figure out how to navigate through the maze, or, you know, perform an attack. Like, that's the moment we all live for. Mm-hmm. You know, we get that shell, or we get Privesque or whatever. And if somebody gives you the answer, they rob you of that joy of experiencing that. Right. So even though it's hard, it's difficult, you know, it's really, really, really important to go through those steps to do it. And on the opposite coin, right, on the opposite side of the coin, you definitely don't want to be banging your head in the wall over and over and over and over and over again, because then you're getting diminishing returns, right, on your perseverance, mm-hmm. right? So at some point, you know, after you've done your research, you've tried, you've banged your head on the wall a number of times, at some point it's good to get a little bit of direction, a little bit of a hint, so that, you know, like I said, you know, the return on investment in your research and your study is worthwhile.
Yeah, I think just as a real world example, when I started developing coding, I took one college class on Python, and as a point of reference, I took college during COVID. So my college experience was very crappy. It was all online based. It was at the very beginning of COVID. So nobody really knew what was going on. There were no good solutions in place for actual learning. So my Python class was a bust. I remember Course Hero and Chegg really bailing me out of that one, because I had so many other things that I was focusing on at the time, and that kind of just took the back seat. So when I came into this job and I started coding, making tools, trying to write tools and do things like that, I was very unsuccessful. And instead of me trying to put in the hours and working, I would go to Darius. Because I'm like, Darius is a coding guru. He knows X amount of different languages. Darius will know what to do. And I kind of hit a wall trying to get with Darius, because Darius was like, I'll give you a hint. I'm not going to give you the answer. And I was like, that's tough. And having that experience with him was one of the most helpful things in the world, because it taught me to go and pursue answers on my own. And especially in development, as an example, when you're trying to work on something and get a computer to do something for you in the form of code for so long, and then you finally get the answer on your own independently, it's one of the best feelings in the world. The dopamine rush that I get when code works, even after doing it for so long, you know, it's just, it's really nice. So
yeah, I love it when I can type a PowerShell commandlet right the first time and I don't have to Google it just from memory, you know, like it's one of those things. Yep. Like you have so much that you're thinking about and trying to work on with a script or like a tool. And then like you get it to work and it's like that eureka moment, the euphoria. It's like, yeah, awesome.
Yeah. And I think this subject ties in well with not only how to get into it and how to learn, but how to continue to learn. Because I think that's one of the cornerstones of cybersecurity and just the industry as a whole is, you know, things today are not going to be the same tomorrow. We're not going to have the same exploits day after day. Things are going to get patched. We're going to have to find new avenues for attack. We're going to have to evolve our tool set as defenders get, you know, more implementations and things of that nature. So I think that's another huge challenge that every single one of us has faced. Because some of the old AMSI bypasses they used to use on internals, you know, they're one and done's, and they worked at one time. And for me, you know, some of the old tools that we used to use for password spraying, they're done. You can't use them anymore because they just get instantly blocked. So always having to find new avenues, new tools, and different ways to go about attacks. I feel like it's another hurdle that we commonly face that ties into learning.
Yep.
Very well.
Yeah, it's the idea of being a practitioner, right? Being a practitioner means you don't stop working on your craft. doesn't matter what industry you're in, if you're a doctor or a lawyer, or you're a mason, or you work in construction, or you're a hacker, a practitioner continuously develops their craft and develops their skills and continuously learns. And a practitioner also knows that they don't know everything, right? It's the age old saying of like, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's ever more true in cybersecurity, because, and there's a dichotomy, right? It's like the more things change, the more they stay the same. We're seeing better EDR products, better security products, better security in general. We're seeing that organizations are doing better. Most organizations, or a handful of organizations, or some, depending on your worldview, right? And what you experience, but we're seeing security get better, right? The bar is elevating, but at the same time, we still have ransomware running rampant, right? Like, we still have significant ransomware issues. So the more things change, the more things, you know, get the same, or the more they stay the same. And I say that to say that techniques change, tools change, things change. You have to be constantly adapting to the changing security landscape. But there are tried and true things that don't change, right? There are tried and true things that are, you know, consistent and evergreen things in security, which is what you learn, right? Like, that's the foundational things that you learn, and, you know, the foundational aspects of the industry. And then you build on top of that over time as you learn and you grow and you develop and get better. One of the things that I like to do to stay up to date on, you know, talking about continuous learning is use Twitter. I've talked about this before, Twitter, X, following people in the industry, particularly people who are doing research, who are publishing that research, who are doing interesting things, making tools, giving presentations at conferences and things like that, following those people online and just, you know, being a consumer of what they're putting out and getting ideas from them and learning from them is a great way to stay abreast and to kind of stay updated on what's going on and what's happening in the industry. Likewise with threat reports. One of my favorite resources, you know, since it came out, is the DFIR report. Those are real investigations into real intrusions with real data, real analysts doing real, you know, research into those cases. And that's a really good look into what we don't always get all the time. You know, how often do we see data breaches happen, but we don't really have all of the data, right? We know, like, oh, they got social engineered, and, you know, maybe they found a password, and then, you know, like, ransomware. But what are the details? Like, what are the procedures that they use? What are the TTPs? You know, what are the tools that they used? That we don't get all the time. So taking those resources, like the DFIR report, following people on Twitter and following their research is a good way to continuously stay up to date on what's out there and what's happening in the industry, and continue mm-hmm. to learn and develop your skills based off of that, what other people are putting out. So that's something that I like to do that hopefully is maybe helpful to other people listening.
Yeah. And, you know, on that note, following people on Twitter, recently I've been trying to, I take other people's tools from GitHub, and then where I can make improvements and where it makes sense, you know, I've started trying to get with the creators of that tool and try and just network with them and push changes and be more active in the industry, because I feel like that also helps you learn, because a rising tide is going to carry all the ships, right? So, so just working with others and really seeing what they do, how they do it, and why they do it, and you know, just asking those questions of other people. But that brings me to a point that, you know, not only are we having to develop personal craft and overall knowledge, but also tool sets. I feel like that's a huge thing for me on, especially mm-hmm. external pen tests. I've kind of shifted the way that I do things from constantly pulling other people's tools on GitHub to starting to shift and make my own. Because I feel like there's a lot of things that I want to do, and they're not necessarily published out there, or there's not a lot of good resources in the form of tools for me to accomplish what I want to accomplish. And so a big part for me of crushing that learning curve and really propelling myself has been, you know, going from using other people's development to developing my own. And yeah. that's not only helping me personally in, you know, propelling my abilities to code, but also, you know, as a professional, knowing what I want to do and how to accomplish it and kind of laying that out.
Yeah, it's kind of like the saying I think of is, those who do teach, you know, it's kind of like that. Like those who really understand a technique or a concept will create a tool for it, right? Mm-hmm. A perfect example is Rubius for Kerberos and abuse for tickets and things like that. The developers of that know Kerberos and know internal Windows Active Directory very, very intricately, and they created a tool to help them with their offensive operations. So tools like that, Mimikatz, another great example of a tool that started because the researcher Benjamin Delpy just wanted to learn more about Windows internals and, you know, how security works and things like that. And then out from it comes Mimikatz, which also, by the way, I think there's a, is there a Darknet Diaries episode on Mimikatz? I feel like, look into the Mimikatz story, like the origination story is really fascinating. It has to do with like spies and like government operatives, I think. There's like a crazy story behind Mimikatz. Maybe we'll talk about that someday. But anyways, sorry, sidebar. developing your own tools is a great way to overcome that hurdle of learning a technique or learning about a technology, right? Password spraying is a great example of that. You know, anybody can download a tool off GitHub and like run it in spray, but mm-hmm. do you know how account lockout works? You know, like, do you know how smart lockout works with Entra? Do you know how proxies work? A lot of the tools have proxying capabilities. So that teaches you how to work with proxies in AWS and how to work with EC2 instances and all of that stuff that you would need to do that. You can kind of figure that out and figure out how it works and implement your own tools or implement changes to that. And that's what mm-hmm. we did with CredMaster. You know, CredMaster, we have customized quite a bit. You've done quite a bit on CredMaster, and we've done a bit as a team to kind of add some things and kind of change some stuff around for our liking. And the same goes with a lot of other tools that we use. A lot of tools are internal specialized tools that we've developed, and then a lot of them are off the shelf that we customize. And that's a great way to learn, to get better, and to kind of overcome that hurdle of, you know, not knowing how things work. Is that's a great way.
Yeah. And that ties into the original point that, like, when I first came in, that was just what I was doing. I'm pulling tools from GitHub and just running them. No idea how they work, but I can pull a command from GitHub and run the tool and get the output that I want. But where's the output coming from? How's the tool working? You know, what are the inner workings? And so really stripping down tools, going into all the different files that mm-hmm. compose the tool, and then just seeing, you know, how it functions. I use a tool called OneDrive Enum, and shout out Nick's Geek for that tool. That is a fantastic tool. That's one that I've tried to collaborate on. I've pushed some changes. And I really want to get with him because I feel like he knows a lot more about that side of Microsoft than I do. And I want that knowledge. So, but as an example, the output for that tool would not generate if the tool exited or aborted mid-run. Mm-hmm. So the output wasn't being generated in real time. And that was a problem for me and my team or anybody that was running that tool. So, you know, just getting in there and going through the 800 lines of code and having to know what's going on so I know where the output is and where it needs to be written and how. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something, even though it was, I consider it a small change because it's, you know, it's not 100 lines of code. It's maybe 10 that make the tool do what I want. But, you know, mm-hmm. being able to strip that down, read it, know what's going on, you know, that's been huge in helping me develop and learn and overcome that hurdle.
So we talked about kind of touched on the ever evolving threat landscape, right? Like, how do you stay abreast of things going on? We talked about that a little bit. Talked about continuous learning and development kind of thing, which is a big topic in and of itself. Like, we could have an entire episode just on continuous learning development. Mm-hmm. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention like the try harder mentality. I just to kind of put a bow on that, I like the idea of trying harder, right? I like the conceptual idea of trying and trying and trying. But like I said, you know, there's something to be said for taking a pause, taking a break. And maybe that's something we can touch on too at the end, is like one of the challenges is, you know, burnout or, you know, even imposter syndrome. Maybe we can talk about that at the end, but I know there's some other stuff that you want to get to as well.
Yeah. Let's touch on communications. I feel like communications in any aspect, depending on how you frame it, can be a huge hurdle. I think that was one that when we first started, we did not have the robust communications that we have now, and that posed a lot of issues for us. And I think I want to tie this in as well with documentation, in terms of knowing what's going on and when. I feel like is a big thing that ties in with communications. So when we first started, communications for us were not as robust. We did not provide as much information to the client up front about activities that we were doing and just detailing how everything was going to go during the engagement in the form of emails and things of that nature. And, you know, I feel like the way we have now, communications has really overcome a hurdle that we used to have where, you know, clients were in the unknown or in the dark. I feel like we kind of crushed that with just being very verbose in emails and very robust in how we communicate and, you know, the cadence at which we communicate. I feel like that's been huge in helping us overcome that.
Yeah. And I put a joke in Teams chat earlier, or maybe it was yesterday, and it was like, a pen test firm that's not communicating every day should be fired, or like fire your pen test firm if they don't communicate with you every day of the engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but I mean that like in today's kind of the way we do testing now is a lot different from before. Like, you know, in the past you would just spray exploits or you'd run Nessus and you'd spray stuff and then you find stuff and you put it in the report. But now it's become much more collaborative. There's been a need to be much more collaborative with clients because technologies have changed. Security defenses have changed. You know, the way and how the means in which people work is different now. We have so many remote employees now. I feel like everything, the way that the work environment has changed has really driven a need to be more collaborative and be more communicative with clients and customers and those who we're working with. You know, during our engagements, we're communicating every single day. We're making sure that the client knows as best we can and best we can articulate what to expect that day, what we're going to be working on, if we suspect that there's going to be any challenges or any roadblocks in our way, stuff that we might need from them as a prerequisite. You know, a lot of times for me on internals, if I'm going to do a password spray and I notice that their password policy is a little bit strange, or maybe they have multiple password policies that I noticed or something like that, I will reach out to them and confirm what the password policy is before I spray them. Mm-hmm. And I also will exclude certain accounts so that if in the rare chance that I lock out every account in their environment, they at least have an admin account they can go and unlock stuff with,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's just being courteous and it's being collaborative and communicative with the client and making sure that they know what to expect, when to expect it, how to expect it, and just being open and transparent. And it also gives them an inside look into our world of like, oh, cool, they're like doing this thing. And it like brings them into it, right? It makes them part of the process. And I think people like to be part of the process. You know, of course, there's going to be clients that are like, I just want the checkbox. Just, I don't care. Don't bother me. Like, just tell me when it's over. But a lot of clients like want to be involved in that process. They want to know what's going on because they might be able to give you feedback on something that you're doing or like point you in the right direction of what to look at that can then help them identify vulnerabilities or misconfigurations or whatever it is. So that's just kind of inside look behind the scenes a little bit on what we think of when we think of collaboration and communication, especially outwardly to clients, customers, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think the hurdle that this crosses is never making a client feel surprised by anything and never making a client feel frustrated. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've had a lot of kickoffs where we ask the question, you know, have you had a pen test, external, internal pen test in the last year? And then how did it go? Mm-hmm. And I feel like whenever there's a complaint from a client, we always get the same answer. It's the firm dumped the report on us and kind of threw their hands up and ran. And, you know, that creates client frustration, that creates client distrust. And then that's just you know, it creates confusion because you give them this long report with all these vulnerabilities, and especially depending on the size of the firm, if you have a smaller firm, they may not have the time or manpower to go out and individually research these vulnerabilities that they may not understand. And so being very communicative with the client is a huge thing for us because, you know, pose a scenario, you find initial access on an external, you know, that's a critical thing. You don't want to wait to tell the client about that until the handoff meeting. Why? You're going to surprise the client. And you also shouldn't wait to propose critical things that need to be fixed now. Then, you know, it's better to be communicative and overly verbose than not verbose at all. So, you know, that's a big thing that we've had to work on and improve upon because we don't want to be in that scenario where we're just dumping a report and leaving or seeing critical things and, you know, holding off until a report meeting to discuss them.
Yeah. And something that's preached internally by Jim and Rob and everybody who's kind of like in leadership here at Secure IT 360, they're always preaching line of sight to the customer, like always have line of sight to the client, which means always have a line of communication there, always make sure that they know what's going on and what to expect. And that's hard, right? Like that takes time out of your day to stop what you're doing, type up an email, like pause and be like, okay, I got to type this email. What do they need to know? Like it takes cycles for us to break out of breaking something or hacking something or doing whatever we're doing. That's like the puzzle, like art side of it, right? We have to break out of that mindset and shift. And now we have to type up this email and do this administrative thing. So it takes cycles. It takes time. It takes work. And it takes intentionality to be able to do that, right? And that's the struggle is, you know, everybody, you know, the perception is we just, you know, log in, we just hack all day and like, you know, it's over. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of administrative tasks. There's a lot of things that go into a pen test that are value add to the client. They provide no value to us. Like us sending an email to a client, like it doesn't do anything for us. It's purely for the client, for their knowledge, for their value. And, you know, going the extra mile and taking that extra few minutes to make sure that you keep the client in the loop and you keep the lines of communication open is really important. And it goes a long way, but it's not easy, right? That it's a big hurdle for people to get in, you know, to get over, especially if you're new to consulting or you're new to kind of like project management and those kinds of things. That can be kind of a difficult thing to get a handle on when you first start.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember some of the first emails that I sent to clients on my engagements, and I go back and look at them every day and they are really just,
it's like going back great. And looking at your fifth grade, like art project. It's like, it's completely, and you could say that about anything, like the tools that you wrote. Like I looked at, what did I look at recently? I forgot what it was, but some PowerShell code that I wrote like years and years ago. And I'm like, who's the idiot that wrote that? Like, that's disgusting.
Yep.
But that's just how it is. Like you learn, you grow, you get better. But it is funny to look back on some of those things to be like, oh man,
it's kind of
so
just
much better now.
It's the proof in the pudding of how we've kind of leaped over that hurdle that we used to have. And it's nice to see. It's nice to go back and see those things and give me confidence that, you know, I have grown as an individual.
Yeah.
I feel like something you touched on that I wanted to talk about was one of the challenging things about pen testing is that it's not straightforward. And every environment is different. And I think kind of the nuance to people outside of the industry is that it's easy to get in, or you run four lines of code like they do in the movies and you're in. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is a big challenge that we face as individuals is we want to provide the most value to the client that we can. And we do that in the form of tangible results, meaning we make progress and, you know, we get footholds and with those go as far as we can. And I feel like sometimes that poses a challenge for me individually is if I don't feel like I've done enough on a pen test or I haven't gotten far enough, you know, sometimes in my head, I'm like, well, I haven't provided enough value. And I feel like that's a challenge that I face. I don't know, like 4 out of 5 of my pen tests, if I don't feel like I've done enough, you know, it kind of irks me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it comes from like that completionist attitude, right? Like, you're probably the type of person that completes a video game like 0 to 100%, right? Like, do you sit down and like Oblivion, like whatever the game is, like if it's a story based game, like, do you complete the whole thing?
So, yes, yeah. I definitely try to.
Like, at least the main campaign, right? Like, you, the main storyline, you probably complete 100% of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've never once completed an entire video game campaign ever. Like,
you've never lived.
I've never completed 100%. Like, I've never been like a completionist in that sense. Mm-hmm. But I know a lot of people are. Like, I know a lot of people, and I have a best friend back when I was in high school. He would sit down and he would play like any kind of video game that had like a story-based component to it, or like an MMO or something. Like, he would be that person that got every achievement, like every like award, completionist mm-hmm. to the fullest. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's part of the mindset and the behavior of particularly like pentester and hackers. Cause like, we like seeing things through, like we like seeing the end result of all that. But, I think that comes from that kind of completionist side of things, of wanting to complete something 100%. But, you know, like, falling back on your methodology and your process, and you can look and say, okay, we followed the process, we followed the methodology, we did provide value because of these things, and kind of looking at it from that lens, especially mm-hmm. from the client's perspective, I think can help with that. But I definitely recognize the struggle for that, because I think it's something, and it ties into imposter syndrome too. It's like we all experience that, like where we complete an engagement or we do something or release a tool or a blog or a white paper, and we can always compare it to something. Like, we can always compare it to something, but it's really not beneficial. It's not useful for us to compare that to somebody else's work or to somebody else's engagement mm-hmm. because that's our own thing. It's our own journey that we went on to do that. So it's kind of a rambling on that topic, but
yeah. I definitely agree about the imposter syndrome. A lot of the times when I go to write something or publish something, I'm very apt to compare it to somebody else's fully furbished completed project, and I'm like, there's no point in me even posting this for anybody else outside of my own personal use, because it's not completed to where other people's things are, and I don't want to put this out there with the state that it's at. And that just kind of creates, you know, an unrealistic timeline, because it's going to take me years of development to get this where somebody else's is. And, you know, I feel like that's kind of held me back sometimes, both on tool development and in my own writing, like with my blog posts. Sometimes I'm like, is there enough content in here for it to be useful? Have I written enough? You know, and then I can compare that with other people's stuff. And then it just kind of, I don't know, it sheds some shadows over my work when yep. I compare it to other people's. So I definitely have faced that.
Yeah, I think everybody experiences imposter syndrome at some point or another. And a couple things that helped me is realizing that, one, nobody's an expert, right? Like, there are very few people who are truly experts in the thing that they do. Like, we can probably count on one hand how many people are truly experts, deep experts in any one given thing. The technology is so vast, the industry is so wide now, that there's not, you know, these experts walking around in every, you know, organization. So we're constantly learning. We're constantly learning and taking research from others. And that's another thing, is that we stand on the shoulders of giants. Like, all of the things that people are researching have come before them. So for example, the certificate abuse stuff that the Spectre Ops folks did a lot of research on, Benjamin Delpy did a lot of research on it before that. And there were other people that researched certificate, AD certificate services, how they work, how they can be abused before that. And, you know, we take a lot of inspiration from other people. And the other thing is, you know, something that helps me, and I try to do this myself, is like, people don't care. Like, I think genuinely people don't really care if you release a tool and it really doesn't work, or it's not good, or subjectively not good, right? or it's got mistakes in it, or there's issues with it, or bugs, or whatever. Like, I think people generally don't really care all that much. Like, people are very self-interest in kind of like self, like self-consumed, right? Like, we really worry about all of ourselves all the time. We think what we need and what we want. But, you know, I released a tool over the weekend. I worked on it for a handful of hours over the weekend. It's a very, very rough draft, but I knew that if I didn't release it like Monday, that I wouldn't release it at all, because I would just keep working on it and keep working on it and keep working on it and doing little tweaks, doing little tweaks. So I forced myself to get it to a point where it was like, okay, I'm good with this. And then I released it to the world. And that's something that helps me. And just doing that over and over again is helpful practice, I think, to kind of defeating that. So those are some of the things that help with me, like with in the imposter syndrome. And just realizing, like, everybody's on their own journey, like everybody's on their own path, and there's no sense in comparing the your work or your efforts to somebody else's, because it's completely different. Like, everybody is different. So that's some of the mental framework that helps me.
Yeah, and I think this topic ties perfectly into time being a challenge that we face. I think a huge thing for us is time, because we do work engagements every week, and during our quote unquote off time, which is really after hours and maybe a day or two gap before our next engagement, you know, that's the time that we have to really sit down and work on anything else, because we have to fill our schedules completely because we have so much to do and, you know, X amount of time to do it. For example, I need time to develop tools and pursue that so that I have tools to use for engagements that I need. In addition to that, I need to, you know, be making content and pursuing that avenue to build myself as a person in the industry. I also need to continue and pursue education and learn new things so that I can be more useful in other avenues of pen testing. And I have to do that in addition to satisfying client requests, completing engagements. You know, like there's so many things that we have to do, and, you know, there's only so many hours in a day for us to do it. And it's not really a complaint for me, just a challenge that I face sometimes when I do want more time to develop, but I don't necessarily have that time because I have X, Y, and Z that I'm working on that day. So,
yeah, and it comes down to priorities. We were talking about this earlier is, you know, you have projects you're working on, you have things you want to do, you have, you know, side things you want to, side projects or things you want to do outside of work and stuff like that. So it comes down to priorities to me. And I think that's one of the difficulties of being a consultant and being a pen tester is being able to manage your time, manage projects, manage priorities is a real skill. Like, you know, it's not an accidental thing for most people to be able to manage multiple clients, numerous clients, engagements with those clients, timeframes, projects, reporting, and do, you know, self-development, work on tools, do content. Like, that's not an accident that people are able to do those things. They work at it. You know, it's a skill in and of itself. So I don't have any like mental frameworks or like methodologies for like time management or anything. But for me, I just have kind of like an inner understanding of what's important, right? Like sometimes I'll have notes on my phone or whatever, or written down in Notepad or something of what I need to work on. But a lot of times I just have an idea in my head of, okay, here's the high level things that I need to be focusing on. And then I just kind of, at least for work, right? I have an idea of what I need to work on. And I know the deadline. I know the time frame roughly for those things for completion. For example, like with a pen test, there's a beginning and there's an end, right? And then for reporting, there's a beginning and an end, right? So we know the beginning and the end. So how we fill that time is really kind of up to you to kind of fill that time and figure out how to get the work done. So for me, I just kind of have some things in mind that high level things that I need to work on. I know the goalposts that I'm like aiming at, and that's kind of how I operate. Like, I don't have any, I know people have like time management methods where like they have a, a bucket of time, and then like they do the work, and then they take a break, and then they take a nap, and then like they go grounding, and then, you know, they do journaling and all that. Like, I don't do any of that stuff, but I do have an idea of like what I need to work on day to day. Some of it's written down, some of it's just in my head. I think that could be part of like a framework, right? Is if you're struggling with time frames or project management, is taking notes, like documenting, taking notes, writing down what you need to work on. Because I do recognize that can be a hurdle for people, is the project management, the how you allocate your time, and how you're able to manage those things, and the deadlines is a skill in of itself, and definitely something that you can cultivate and work on, but it doesn't come naturally, I don't think.
Yeah, I think the way I manage time is just when I feel like doing a certain project, I give 100% to that project. For example, if I sit down and I don't have an active project that needs to be done by end of day, and that day I feel like coding, I'm just going to sit down and code, because that is what I want to do, and that's what I'm going to be able to focus on the most. Even though I may have 6 or 7 other things on my list that I need to do, or, you know, want to do, I guess wants.
Yep.
You know, if I can sit down and just dedicate that time and knock that thing off my list by giving it 100% for that time frame,
yep,
then, you know, that opens up more time for me to go to the next thing. And that's just kind of how I've, you know, done time management while I've been here, is if I have a pressing project that gets 100% of my attention, and then after that, the next thing on my list really gets that 100%, or what I feel like I want to do gets that next 100%.
I think where people get stuck sometimes, just from my perspective and just observing other people, is guilt. Do you ever like work on a thing and then you're like, oh man, I really feel like you feel guilty for not doing something else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think guilt, like being hard on yourself and being feeling like guilty that you're like working on a side project. Like, I have a number of side things that I am working on that I've invested money in to do, like t-shirts, right? Like, I create an Etsy store, and like I'm doing content on the side and personal brand stuff. And I took all of last week, and the last like week and a half, I haven't like created hardly any content at all. And at first, like the first couple of days, I felt really guilty. I'm like, I need to be working on content, like making personal brand stuff and like putting myself out there and stuff like that. And then I was like, wait, like that's silly. Like, my goal is not like short-sighted in that like I need to make a certain amount of content in a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm in it for the long run, so I shouldn't feel guilty about not working on those things. Particularly because I'm following like my inner compass of what I want to work on and what I think is important and what I like doing. Mm-hmm. And this whole last weekend, I was working on this tool, Bad Shares, as like a side thing. I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'm not going to make content this week. I'm going to work on Bad Shares this weekend and work on that, because that's what makes me happy in that moment. Mm-hmm. And that's outside of work stuff. But like, I think a lot of people feel, they get to this point where they feel guilty for not working on other things, or not working late, or not working, you know, additional hours to better themselves or learn. And I think you have to find a way to be okay with, you know, taking a break, with, you know, what your priorities are. If your priorities are your family, or like, I don't know, baseball league, or doing stuff, that's fine. Just don't expect to be, you know, like a super whiz crack, like, you know, malware developer if you're not working on it, right? But it's okay, you know, don't feel guilty about it. And I think that's something that is part of that imposter syndrome, like burnout, like discussion of being okay and not making yourself feel guilty for not working on things or not putting in extra hours. Like, it's okay. Just realize where your priorities are. And I think that is something that's helped me, and maybe will help others.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that guilt ties perfectly into burnout, because if you feel guilty about working on things that you want to do professionally or personally, and that guilt kind of bleeds in and you end up succumbing to it, and then, you know, just doing more work, more work, more work to satisfy that feeling, that's when the burnout's going to creep in. Yeah. And that's very real for everybody in our industry. You know, after my time working here, you know, for the past 3.5 years, I know when our busy seasons are, and I know when I'm going to be swamped with work, and then I know when I'm going to have more lax time to work on what I want to work on. And so I think that's a huge thing for me in avoiding burnout, is knowing I can work on my personal projects during this time because I'll have more time. So I can develop during this time. I can generate more content during this time. You know, I can study and pursue certifications during this time. And then when it hits that busy season, I do nothing but pen testing. I'm not working on side projects. I'm not developing and coding. I'm just doing what I have to do to avoid that feeling of burnout. Because if you couple a lot of additional items in when you're super busy with pen testing work, you're just going to lose it altogether, because you're going to be stressed out from the pen testing work. And in your spare hours, you more so need to rest and recoup your brain than to pick up something else and continue to work on that. Because if you don't give yourself a break, you're just going to crash and burn.
Yep. And it's harder to work on things when you don't enjoy it, right? I think that's a real part of the conversation, is I think a lot of times burnout can come from not really enjoying the work. You know, I think of, you know, the, like the modern, you know, parent or something that comes home from work and they complain, because I was that person. I, in my last job, like I hated it before I left my last job, like I hated it. I was so anxious. I was so stressed out. There was so much conflict there that, you know, it was like making it was sickening and making me sick, like physically, to kind of endure that and go through that. So I know what it's like when you don't truly enjoy the work, because I was there myself. And transitioning to Secure IT 360, when I'm doing this pen testing stuff, like now I wake up and I'm like, I'm jazzed. Like, even we've done, you know, it's been fairly busy for me for internals the last couple months. And I don't know, I've done like 6 or 8 pen tests in the last couple months, something like that. And, you know, that means we're going back to back to back to back to back. And you're like always on, and you need to be on it, you know, every single week, and providing like, you know, a lot of value to the client, and being like a good, pen tester and trying to go the extra mile. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of energy mentally, physically. So, even going through all that and like being super inundated with work and going back to back, I still, and like staying up late, I still wake up and I'm like, man, I can't wait to get like domain admin this week. This is gonna be awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I'm still amped up about it. So I think that comes into the equation as well, is like, if you wake up and you're miserable and you're like, you're not looking forward to it, maybe it's time to like have some retrospection and just be like, maybe I don't really like this thing that I'm doing, whether it's a SOC analyst or a pen tester, or you work in TRC or whatever it is you're doing, or you're a CISO or whatever, whoever you are listening to this, whatever your role is, maybe you don't enjoy it as much as you think you do, or you hoped you would enjoy it. So I think that plays into it as well, as like just not enjoying it as much as something else you would rather be doing. And that's okay. Like, it's totally okay for it to be a job and just for it to be its, you know, a thing. But I think that can help as well. And then with the last thing I'll say on burnout is take breaks, right? Like, I love this, and you know this, Tyler, like I can pen test for days on end without like water, without food. I can, without a shower, like I could just literally sit at my desk for mm-hmm. days and days on end and just sit here. But it's not good on your health, right? And especially if you have family and things like that, that's not good for them either. So part of burnout is taking care of other people around you as well, I think, especially yourself. So getting up from your desk, trying to get some sunlight, go for a walk, take a break. Those are very real things. And especially, you know, when you hit a wall in terms of like a challenge or something difficult you're trying to do, or an exploit that's not working, or you're in a certification exam and you just can't get initial access, whatever it is, if you've hit a wall, like taking a break and just stepping back, going and touching grass can really help. Go for a walk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my last thing on burnout is, I think I experienced that at the end of last year, and it wasn't job unhappiness, wasn't the culprit. I think it was just a season of life I'm in. I think that's very important to recognize, because, you know, as humans, we're going to go through seasons, is the way I like to look at it. And some seasons are going to be happy and better. Some seasons are going to be sad and depressing. And, you know, it's kind of just the way of the world. So the end of last year, you know, I was starting to feel like my job was repetitive and, you know, my passion was starting to die back. And I'd also recently lost my grandfather. And so I just had a bunch of life things that were closing in on me, in addition to my job, just not having the same passion. And that resulted in me dropping all of my side responsibilities outside of pen testing and just focusing on my job. And that was all I was doing because I couldn't do anything else. Mm-hmm. And I think that's okay. Like, as a person, you don't have to operate at 100%, 100% of the time. It's okay to give 100% of what you can give. And if that 60% is what your 100% is in that current season, in your current place, you know, give that full 60. And that's where I was at. And so I think just knowing where you're at and how much you can give and giving that is important. Because even if it's not 100, if you're still giving it all, no matter what your all is, you know, you're still progressing.
Dude, that's the deepest, like most human real thing I've heard like in a long time. Like, I mean it. Like that right there is the like some of the wisest like stuff for such a young person, like some of the wisest stuff you've ever said, like hands down. But you're so right. Like that super deep, super wise. And like, I love that you said that because that's what's great about working on a team is like a rising tide lifts all boats, and finding meaning in your work are all things that I think about in that same vein. Is like, your 100% might be 60%, but you've got a team of people kind of pulling the 140s to help through that. And it's like, it's a team game, you know? And I think that's why it's so important to work on a team and work with people that you enjoy working with and spending time with, because they will support you. They will lift you up. They will help through. And ultimately, you know, finding, you know, for me with, you know, you talked about like meaning the work and stuff. And I think it helps when you have those success stories, right? When a client is like really happy with the work you've done and they go out of their way to say, you know, thank you. This engagement has been really good. Like, we really got a lot of value out of it. It really like hits you right there. And it kind of, you know, if you think of the video of the Grinch whose heart grows like three sizes, right? Yep. At the end of the movie, your heart grows. It's like, oh man, like, thank you for saying that. It really means a lot for people to say, like, you provided a lot of value. We got a lot out of this. And it helps you find meaning in the work when those kinds of interactions happen. And I go back to those things. Like, if I'm like, man, this is dumb. Like, why am I doing this? You know, I get into that mental space. I'm like, we're helping clients, like we're meaningfully changing the security of organizations and firms and stuff like that. And that's what I go back to. And something that I keep reminding myself of is like, there is meaning in the work. And I can't think, you know, there's a lot of jobs that you can do that are, you know, quote unquote insignificant in the grand scheme of things, but like we're doing work that has real impact and real significance, you know. And I think that I think about that a lot, you know, in the context of meaning and work and what we do.
Yeah. And I think something you touched on that's very important for everybody to understand is that in the work, you're not alone. If you're on a team, that team is there to support you. And I am super grateful for the environment that my team has fostered. Because, you know, earlier, late last year, when, you know, I wasn't operating full capacity, I was just honest with Brad about it. And, you know, he was like, just take stuff off your plate. It's okay. Just do the job. And that really helped, benefiting both my mental health and getting back into it and reigniting that passion and just, you know, helping me as a person in that place, just knowing that somebody would listen and that, you know, even if I wasn't doing X, Y, and Z in addition to pen testing, I was still doing the job.
Yep. Yeah. You need space, right? Like, especially, you know, morning, and it's crazy that we're going here on like a pen test episode or like a pen test podcast, you know, cybersecurity, but like this is what really matters, right? Like, humans and people and these traits and all these, the human element of stuff, like that, that's what really matters. That's what makes us who we are. That's what makes us connected to other people. That's what makes people gravitate towards us and want to work with us, is who we are and what we do, what we stand for, what we believe. But like, that's just part of the process, right? Is you have to, there's a certain amount of process you have to go through, to get back to like where you were, and that's fine. And that's great. I think that's normal and human and expected, right? It'd be weird if like, you know, you're just like the opposite of that, like gung ho and like, you know, full on like 150%, like going, you know, Mach 10. So, yeah, I think that's normal. I think that's human. And I think that's a normal process to go through. And I think giving yourself the space and the air cover and not feeling guilty about it and just giving yourself room to breathe in that sense, mm-hmm. will help kind of like help you figure out what your priorities are going forward, and kind of help you like reignite what it is you enjoy doing. So, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And I definitely empathize with that and can 100% relate. And I think a lot of people listening probably can too.
Yeah. I think it's important to remember that just because we work with computers all day does not mean that we are computers. You know, at the end of the day, we're all human. So
yeah,
I think that'll wrap it up. I think it's a good note to end it on.
Cool. Yeah. We're at like 56 minutes. So if you have stayed this long and you're still listening, very big thanks. We appreciate it. Hopefully this episode was insightful to you, whether you're a pen tester, SOC analyst, CISO, IT manager, whatever it is you do. Hopefully you got value from this episode, from us kind of talking and chopping up and ranting about challenges. And if you would, go follow us on LinkedIn, the Secure IT 360 LinkedIn page. You can find our content that we produce, which is podcasts and webinars and or podcasts, white papers, blogs, all that stuff on offsec.blog. And if you would like a pen test and you want us to kind of break into your network and hack your things and break your Active Directory in many, many more ways than you thought possible, and you want help with actually fixing those things and like actually getting actionable advice and recommendations from people who are in it day in and day out, you can find us at secureit360.com. We would love to work with you.